This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
And we're on live. Hopefully we're here live on Instagram as well. You're here live with Dr. Jeff, where we host the next 30 minutes here on Pet Life Radio's Ask the Vet with Dr. Jeff. Here for you, here for your pets, here for anything you want to talk about. Now is the time to do it. Free advice. You ask the questions. We love to hear it. We love to help you any way we can here on Pet Life Radio and Instagram Live. So as we are starting, now we are starting to get people to join, and that's great. Good morning, good afternoon, wherever you may be. And so I'm going to wave. I'm waving back to everybody who waves to me. And if you have any questions, now is the time. So I hope everyone had a good week. It was pretty busy for me, which is, it seems busy all the time. It's great. It's a blessing and a curse, I guess, at the same time, that I'm very busy, which I love. And it's, you know, it's one of those things that's never been work for me. So I enjoy it. But it amazes me that there are so many practices out there and they're swamped. I mean, I've had people tell me that they can't get into their own vet for 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Now, I don't know how many people they're seeing in a day or how many cases they're seeing, but I'm a little bit surprised. So, good question. Why do dogs eat poop? And is it bad if we know the other dog, no illness? So, first of all, that is a very intriguing question. I don't know anybody has the right answer. I'm going to wave as I speak, but we do know that they do it. I have my theory. Again, it's scientifically proven, no, but it's out there and I'll share it with you and you can see if maybe it's something that makes sense to you. What I find, and for those of you just joining me, the question is, why do dogs eat poop? And they do. So I have found the following. My first question is, maybe they like it. Maybe they're hungry. Yeah, no, you're going to ask them. They're not going to tell you. But from an evolutionary standpoint, here's my take. I have found, and again, this is not set in stone, but I have found that when it comes to poop eating, usually the males will eat other poops. They go out on a walk, they pick a poop, they want to eat it. And even in my household, I have, you know, one that they don't eat their own. The females, however, seem to eat their own. The question is why? So here's my theory, take it or leave it. When a male has poop that they want to eat, they see the poop, they want to eat it. Males are laying claim to a territory. And much of that is smells. So they don't want to have other dog smells there. So what they do is they will go ahead and destroy the evidence of the other male dogs by eating the poop, not their own. There are other everyone else's. Females, however, they are there to protect themselves and their offspring. And that's why, as you know, female mama dogs, they clean up and they lick the poop of their puppies, right? And the reason for that is they want to eliminate, they want to destroy the smell so other predators don't pick up and follow that odor to her litter and to her. So I find that the female dogs will usually eat their own to remove any evidence that they exist, that they're there, whereas the male dogs are getting rid of their competition by eating the other poop. Now, are you going to see? I haven't seen any papers on this. That's just my thought. I think it makes a lot of sense. And I have noticed just from my own experience, 40 years, that many dogs that are coprophagic, meaning poop eating, the males are eating other dogs and the females are eating their own. So I don't know. Tell me what you think. If you have dogs that are coprophagic, really go ahead and just let me know if it's a male. Are they eating their own? Watch. All of you can have male dogs eat their own. There goes that theory. But anyway, it's something to think about. And I think I'd love to get some feedback. So my sister loves my orange shirt. So I had a question for you. See how many sports fans are out there. I'm wearing like blue jeans and an orange shirt, blue and orange. But name me some professional sports teams, if you know, whose colors are blue and orange. Okay. So anyway, what do you think? Mark, you can also chime in here if you want. So sports teams, colors are blue and orange. Let me know what you think. What was that? Oh, Miami Dolphins. That's a good one. Okay. And anyone else if you want to chime in? Let's see. Any questions? I'm trying to see. Denver Broncos. That was what I thought too, Steve. The Broncos. Let's get some basketball teams in there. There is and baseball. Baseball. I'll give a hint for you New Yorkers out there. The Titans. I love this. This is great. So, yeah, when I was putting it on Steve this morning, the first thing I thought was the Broncos. That is so funny. But then I realized there are a bunch of others. It's pretty popular colors. I don't know how many of you have ever been to camp as kids, But we used to make lanyards, all right, with the plastic things. And one of my favorite color combos for making my lanyards, my chain around my neck for a keychain, the different stitches, the spiral, the diamond, the box stitch, oh my God, there was all these things. I'm bringing back old memories. Orange and blue were my favorite. The Bears, yep. Okay, Syracuse is definitely orange, the orange man. I'm thinking in the baseball world, think of the Mets. The basketball world, think of the Knicks. They also have those colors. So anyway, let's get some questions. I should be the one asking questions. You should be asking the questions. Let's hear some questions about dogs. So let's talk some interesting case. I had a really fascinating case. And you know, it just goes to show, sometimes you got to go with your gut. And I had a dog come in, a one-year-old, beautiful German Shepherd. And a female, name was Kona, and had a mass in this area of the neck. And the history was, she is a puppy, chews on everything. So over the weekend, within days, this thing is growing like crazy. Now, my first thought before even touching it is an abscess, because even an aggressive tumor doesn't grow by leaps and bounds. I mean, yeah, it can grow, of course, but it's not going to grow within, you know, 3 days. So I'm thinking, okay, an abscess, something can. He comes in and I'm expecting to have something I can drain. And this thing is rock hard, solid, and it is attached to all the tissue. And I'm thinking, holy cow, this could be a mass. So I take an ultrasound. It's ugly. There are pockets of some fluid, but it's pretty solid and rock hard. So I say, you know, look, we need to biopsy it. So I first stick a couple of needles into it to see if I can find a soft spot, because I'd love to just hit a spot and just have pus come out. And I go, all right, that's all it was. And we got to find out why, maybe a foreign body, a foxtail, a piece of wood, all sorts of things. But this thing was really hard. So I take a cut, a piece out of it, submit it for biopsy. This thing is getting bigger. The dog, it's actually pushing against the dog's trachea. That's how big it was. And the dog was having a tough time breathing. So we started antibiotics to, as we say, CYA, cover your you-know-what. And I'm hoping, I put a rush on the biopsy. As he's picking up that afternoon, and I'm showing him how extensive it is, I all of a sudden feel on the bottom part of it a little bit of a soft spot. I said, you know what? Give me a second. I just want to run her back. I just want to try one thing. I take a needle, a big, what's called an 18-gauge needle, and I just find that little soft spot and poke the needle in. And oh my gosh, it was like a geyser. There was pus coming out of that thing. I must have filled, I don't know, 50 cc's of just pure, disgusting pus. And now I'm thinking, this is great. I mean, it's ugly as hell, but it was great because now my original theory was confirmed, because even an aggressive mass. So it was already late in the day. He was picking up at 5 o'clock. I say, I want you to come back tomorrow. We started on, as I said, a heavy duty antibiotic anyway, which was good. We had a rush waiting back because I said, you know, there is so much damage when a cancer invades tissue. This could be basically a cancer that then the infection was secondary, or it could be all primary from some sort of wicked infection. Maybe, as I said, a foreign body was my thought. And so we just didn't know yet. Anyway, they fast forward. And what happened was, it was pure abscess. A day and a half later, the results come back. All what we call granulation tissue necrosis. I mean, it was bad, but no cancer cell. So I was thrilled. I put a drain. I had to come back the next morning. We actually put a drain in, because that we just needed to let that thing continually drain. Even by the second day, where the stuff coming out of the drain was more what we call serous and not thick pus. P.S. He texted me on Friday afternoon, the swelling is down. I mean, it's still going to take a while for the scarring to resolve, but this dog is doing, like he says, eating well, back to normal. These are the cases that we literally look forward to, where we can actually make such a difference in such a short amount of time. But it also teaches me, again, it reinforces, and for everybody out there, you may not get your answer right away, but use logic. And logic here told me that even the most aggressive tumor will not double in 2 days. So something else had to be going on. Not to say it wasn't a cancer, but it wasn't the primary. It wasn't the cancer by itself. Could have been secondary infection that became more of the problem. But anyway, in a case like this, it was all infection, which makes sense. We don't usually expect to see cancer in a one-year-old dog. However, I mentioned to him when we first talking about this, I remember one of my first cases going through my oncology rotation when I was a senior at Davis, was a 9 or 10 month old magnificent golden retriever who had a fibrosarcoma on the face. It's horrendous. Unfortunately, that dog ended up having to be put to sleep. So it does happen. As we know, look, I'm lecturing at Children's Hospital, I think at end of July, and talking about dog bites along with an ER doc at Children's. And you know what I like to do, I'll lecture sometimes about dog bites. I'll lecture on what we call zoonotic diseases, with their diseases that go from pets to kids. So again, Children's Hospital, these are the new residents training pediatricians of the future. They need to know these things. They need to know how to talk to parents about these things. And so I'm there to, again, to give them the animal perspective. And of course, the doctor is there, whether it was an infectious disease doc in case of zoonotic diseases, or in this case, an ER doc in the case of bite wounds. So we sort of do tag team, and it's great. They like it. They learn a lot. I enjoy it. You know, I usually lecture to veterinarians. So it's great to lecture to MDs too. So, all right, question came in. Hi, I'm Chihuahua Mix. Would like to know, his mix. Is there a more accurate test you would recommend? Well, first of all, with a grain of salt, there's the Wisdom panel. There are a couple of DNA panels now. I don't have any choice or any recommendation one over the other. I know Wisdom has been around for a long time. I will tell you this, however. There was a writer, a journalist writer, and he was writing about these tests. So he submitted, I think, 4 samples, maybe 5. One was from a 100% pure breed, pedigreed down up to the great, 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 great Dane. He had 2 mixes and he had his own. He actually submitted his own blood for evaluation and sent them to like 4 different genetic DNA testing companies. Only one company got the Great Dane right. One of them, right, also put down Chihuahua. Then there were the 2 mixes. One was predominantly Beagle. The other one, I also said some Beagle, but not all Beagle. And then whatever mixes. 2 of them actually said they could not read at all the journalist's own sample, which makes sense because they don't have the DNA into to test against it. So that made sense. But 2 of them put him as mixed breed dog. So what does it tell you? There's a lot of questions about these testing. Again, try it, but I've had cases where you see a huge breed and all the dogs that come in were small breed. I don't know. I'm not even interested. I never did it with my dog. I have mixes. I never did it. I don't know if it's going to work. I don't know how accurate they are. But for fun, if nothing else, it's good coffee table conversation. So next time you have guests over, you pull out the DNA and you have something to talk about and you'll get used to talking about dogs. And, you know, anytime, it's like when I drive by a car and I see a dog in the car, or even though they shouldn't be on the driver's lap, but they are, I always get excited. I love to see the relationship that people have with their animals. It's great. So again, if you're going to drive with your pet in a car, make sure he's well secure, whether it's in a carrier and the carrier is secured in a seatbelt, or you get him with one of those harnesses that fits into the seatbelt, you shouldn't have them on your lap. Have I been known to break that rule with my own dogs? Yes. Am I proud about it? Maybe. No, I'm just kidding. No, but at least it's great to have your dogs with you. Can you talk about flea and tick collar compared to the chewable pros and cons? Okay, so there are some collars out there. One is called Seresto. They are good. I still am a fan. Now with the new isoxazolines, I know they're effective. The caveat being that dogs that have been known to have some sort of seizure activity, it could be possibly exacerbated by some of these isoxazolines, and only one doesn't mean all of them. So for example, you have Bravecto, Credelio, Simparica, NexGard. I don't care which one you use, but if one of them happens to initiate a seizure in a dog that has had seizures, then obviously you want to stop. Now, for example, my son adopted Wheezy. Wheezy is a gorgeous year-old golden retriever with seizures. That's how he ended up at the rescue. I mean, he is stunning. We have him under control now. Now, because of that, I'm not recommending that he use any of those. So I'm thinking of maybe putting him on Comfortis or Trifexis or even a Revolution. Of all of the topicals, the one that seems to still have some efficacy is the Revolution. Now, it's not my favorite. It's good for cats. I really like it for cats. It's actually one of my favorite for cats. Credelio also makes a pill for cats called Credelio Cat. I hear it's good. I've not used it. I have cats. I use the Revolution, or which is called Selamectin, but I use NexGard for my dogs. So anyway, just know there are some options out there that are still effective, that if you have dogs with seizures or have known to have seizure activity, they would be okay. So I hope that helps. The collars, I'm not a huge fan. I think that people who've used them are happy with them. I just think that there's better control out there. And now, as you know, Three of the four isoxazolines have their plus versions, or in case of Saperica Trio, that also takes care of heartworms. Anyway, we are 5 minutes overdue for our commercial break. And again, as I said, I get the dirty looks from Mark. I'm just kidding. He does it. He's so cool. He doesn't care. But anyway, we got to get those in there. So stay tuned. Don't go away. We'll be back after these short messages from our sponsors here on Pet Life Radio. And for those of you on Instagram, I'll mute myself here and we'll mute it. And then we'll go ahead and be back in a minute. So don't go away.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Are back live here on Pet Life Radio. So we're just talking Todd over on Instagram. He talked about it's been a month since he put his 16-year-old Yorkie and a year to date that his Aussie had to put Echo, his Aussie, to sleep. And just, you know, again, it's a cycle. Cycle of life. We know it's going to exist and there's no way getting around it. And we just have to know that when you're going to get a pet, most likely we're going to outlive them. And these are dogs and cats, by the way, that can go 16. I just did a piece on an 18-year-old Chihuahua, and I've had cats, patients, that have gone over 20. Is it the norm? No, it's not the norm, but it can happen. My oldest cat went 18, and I was thrilled. I mean, how about when I had my Russian dwarf hamster? They go 3 years. A bunny might go 7 years. I mean, so we know that when you're going to get a pet, there's going to be a limited lifespan, and that limit is going to be way, way shorter than ours. So it's just, it shouldn't stop you from getting the pet, because you have to look at the positive. The positive is during the time that you're sharing your lives together, there's nothing better. It's the greatest thing. It's the greatest joy that they're bringing you, and guarantee you it's the greatest joy you can bring to them. And that's why they bond to us. And they don't bond to us because they dislike us. They bond to us because they love us. And it's a great mutual appreciation, a mutual devotion. And that's what makes having pets so great. So it wouldn't stop me. It is sad. And that's what I tell people. When you have these situations and you are putting your pets to sleep, don't wait too long to bring another pet into your household, because the only one that suffers is going to be you. And I mean that. When you have that heart and you're sharing it about that uncontrollable love, and you're sharing it with your family and the pet, that you're the only one that gets hurt by not having a pet in the house is you. Your pet that you had to say goodbye to is gone. You know, people anthropomorphize, oh no, but I feel like I'm cheating on my deceased pet. You're not. You're cheating yourself by not to have another pet. And I used to say, I've heard people say, oh God, I'm going through this. It's so hard. I'm not going to do this again. No more pets for me. Now, I mean, cocky me, that inside I'm laughing because I know they'll be back. And I would say high 90s are also, they're going to get that pet. So knowing that now, I used to say, well, I'm going to wait a couple of months. Now I wait 10 minutes. I mean, I'm already looking because I know the only one that gets hurt. And in my case, where we have multiple pets, they absolutely miss them. I remember when I had my first Labrador, it was named Thor. And then we had a second lab named Woody. And there was a big age difference between the two of them. And Thor passed away the end of summer, just before my second year of vet school. So now my wife and I are driving back in separate. Usually we had two cars down here. So one would take Thor and one would take, well, I would take Thor. She would take Woody. Now there was no Thor. So we get back to Davis, into our house, open the door. Now, it's not unusual for Woody not to have Thor because they were in different cars. And he charged in the house looking for Thor. Thor wasn't there. And he would mope and he would be around. Now, what really got me, and I'm sure many of you can relate, they each had their own bed in our living room. And a big, comfy, cushioned bed. And Woody would never go into Thor's bed. And running around after days of looking for Thor, he started going onto Thor's bed and sniffing and sniffing and crying. It was unbelievable. That's when we knew, oh my God, we need to get another dog. We need to get. So a friend of mine owned Woody's dad, a big, gorgeous yellow lab named Monty. My friend was also a veterinarian, an equine vet I worked with when I was working at the Chino Valley Equine Hospital. And his name was Derek. I called Derek, said, Derek, can we use Monty again for another breeding? He goes, sure. So he basically let us use Monty. And this time we bred him to another yellow lab. So yellow and yellow, all the pups would be yellow. He gave us the pick of the litter because he didn't want another dog. And the one who supplies the male usually gets the pick of the litter. So we got the pick of the litter, 9 dogs, puppies in the litter, all males. And we wanted, of course, a male. Well, how do you pick a litter of gorgeous yellow Labradors? How do you pick the right one? You can't. But we always joke afterwards that we picked the wrong. No. His name was Chester. I named him, interestingly, after my first solo vet school case as a freshman, where we were responsible for a dog. We obviously weren't doing medicine. We were just freshmen, but we had to check on them. We had to make sure they had their clean cages or runs and their bandages were clean and whatever. It was just the grunt work that we did as techs before getting into vet school. And my case was a yellow lab named Chester. So when we finally got our yellow lab, we, of course, named him in honor of my first solo vet school case. We named him Chester. And Woody and Chester were 1.5 years apart and lived a really, really great long life together. So it was the best thing we ever did. So I would say that don't hurt yourselves unless you already have, like me, 9 pets at home. You're the only one that's going to suffer is you by not having one. So keep that in mind when it comes time to get that other. I remember Thor. Yeah, Thor was great. He was a great, great dog. And hi, Elena. How are you, by the way? Actually, Jill's here now. We're just about to do something on Talk Shop Live. In fact, those of you who can stay tuned, you can go to Talk Shop Live. Just hit it in the search bar. I'm doing my show. We're going to talk about some of the products that we have, that I have on Performance by Dr. Jeff. And we're kind of theming these. We've already talked a lot about the products before, but talking about summertime, we're talking about being out there exercising your dogs and just the hazards. I wouldn't say hazards, but things that you're going to have to deal with when you're out there with your dogs and you're hiking and you're running around. And I mean, you know, maybe some joint pain, maybe some arthritis for your older dogs that are flaring up, maybe getting dirty. And coming with the 4th of July coming up, it's kind of around the corner. We're talking about our chill, which is my very natural calming formula. So anyway, thank you. It's Bitty Pity Rescue. Great point, my cloud chaser, that there are pet loss support groups. And many of you, don't be embarrassed. When you tear up when you talk about a past pet, that's exactly why we have them. Because they have that emotional attachment to us. And you can't not be sad when you reminisce about a past pet. That's exactly another reason why I say, don't wait too long. Because, you know, why you wait? You wait because you want to memorialize your pet. If you're going to cremate, do you want that paw print? Do you want something that helps you remember your last pet? You want to remember your past pet? Get a new pet. I'll tell you why. Inevitably, when you get a new pet, that new pet is going to, whether it's an expression, a behavior, a vocalization, something, and you're going to say to yourself, oh my God, Bowser used to do that. That's how you remember Bowser. Your new pets will always help you reminisce and remember your past pets. And that's one of the reasons why I have so many, because between all the pets that I have, there's always something going on that my wife had to say, yeah, Thor used to do that, or Woody used to do that, or Chester used to do that, or Grover used to do that. They're all fresh in your mind, and that is the beauty of having them. So anyway, let's see what we got here. I want to wave to everybody. Cataracts if I have to go through surgery. All right. TCAP, dog cataracts. Is it advisable to go through surgery? My answer is it all depends on the situation. So many factors. First of all, if it's unilateral and the dog is older, I usually say let's wait. Now, there is a new theory, however, that the chance of success is greater with an immature cataract. So one can say, well, if we got this cataract, check out the medical aspects. Does the dog have diabetes? Could have been second to an injury. So if there is potential for the other eye to go, or it's already starting, then you might want to do the surgery sooner, because the sooner, the more immature the cataract, the better. Now, what else happens if you have both eye bilateral? Do you do surgery on both? Remember, dogs do fine, by the way, just on their nose. So do you need to do it? If you have a much older dog that is already knows the house backwards and forwards and knows the route, right, that you go on your walks, and they know that backwards and forwards, they pick up all the smells, and you're always with them on a leash, do they really need the vision? And some say no. At this point, they're fine. Dogs don't complain. I've seen dogs with bilateral mature cataracts and are manipulating, going around the house with ease. So we end up, we start worrying about it and anthropomorphizing, but they don't. They're fine. So I would talk to your veterinarian. Definitely consult with an ophthalmologist. And if the dog is healthy, there are some also there are tests that should be done to make sure that even after removing the cataractous lens, they'll still be able to see, that it's not an optic nerve issue involved. So they do an ERG, an electroretinogram, to make sure the retina is still functioning. So at least you have a chance. If that shows that there's no nerve impulse anymore to the back of the eye, then it's a waste of money and time. Stop, you're putting your dog through unnecessary surgery. So you want to do your homework. But if everything fits and the ERG is normal and the doctor says there's a good chance, I remember also one thing that they used to take out just the cataractous lens. Now, not only do they remove the cataractous lens, they are implanting a lens that maybe can help them see better after the cataract surgery than they ever did even before the cataract, because dogs' vision of all the senses is really not the best. Their ears are great. Their nose, forget about it. Their nose is amazing. So anyway, if it's one eye and 9 years of age, I would be hesitant to rush you into surgery. If you want to at least make an appointment with an ophthalmologist to get all the pros and cons. And a second factor is the cost. It's not cheap. In fact, it's very expensive. I remember, I wouldn't be surprised if it's $5,000 to $7,000. So, you know, if you have a dog with one good eye and is not complaining and is getting around and doesn't have diabetes, so you're not worried necessarily about the second eye, I don't know. I would hold off and think about it. At least talk to your veterinarian, at least talk to your an ophthalmologist in the area. Just get all the pros and cons, the good, the bad, the ugly, the post-operative stuff. I mean, it's not an easy yes or no answer. There's so many factors involved. So good luck and let me know. Yes, you went already to a vet eye center. All right. And what do they say? I mean, are they pushing surgery? Are they not pushing surgery? What? Look at the cost. Do they fear the other eye is going? If the other eye is perfect, I don't know if you really need it. So anyway, that's my 2 cents. It's free. Take it or leave it. What can I tell you? He has to go through 1800 industry quality. Yeah, and exactly. 1800 just to do the ERG. So add that, tack that on, because that's of course you're gonna have to do that. So it's really a tough call. It's a tough call. All right. Anyway, so let's see what else we got here. I want to make sure I'm getting all of you. Okay. Oh, a call from Columbia. Arnold, hello. Columbia, that's great. And that's not, I hope not Columbia, Missouri. I think that's Columbia with that name. Hola. So that's probably good. Arrest loss age. Let me see. I'm in a rescue, lost 5 to old age the past year. Talk about heartache. Yes. Thank goodness we have a few healthy. Yes, that's great. And you know, I'd be lying to tell you that it's not going to hurt. It hurts even. Yes, regardless of their age, regardless of how you know you're doing the right thing, saying goodbye is never easy. But okay, I think I got everybody here. All right, anyway, it is time. I got to go prepare for my Talk Shop Live. If you want to join me on Talk Shop Live, if you have any questions, you can ask them on Talk Shop Live too. And it's live, and I'm there for whatever it takes, sometimes 15 minutes, sometimes a half hour. Okay, so wonderful seeing everybody. I will be here next Sunday, same bat time, same bat channel, here on Pet Life Radio and on Instagram Live during the week, as you know, on both Pet Life Radio, Dr. Jeff, at PetLifeRadio.com. Instagram, it's Werbs_DBM, just stick in Jeff Werber, and we will be happy to help you out and answer any questions you have. In the meantime, have a wonderful week.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.